Welcome to CUTV News Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters talk to today's top thinkers from all around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas that you can put to use in your personal or professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, we dig deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. CUTV News Radio, it's the show where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
We thank you very much for joining us. It is 1 p.m. Eastern here at the Broadcast Center, and it is July 8th, 2019, Monday, at the time of this broadcast, which will be archived for future airing as well. So if you'd like to hear the show again or share the link with family and friends, feel free to do that. Wonderful opportunity to learn more about our great guests by tuning into our shows and sharing the joy that our guests bring us with the incredible perspectives and wisdom that they have. And they're all working hard to make our world a better place. Just like our fantastic guest, they were in the midst of an exclusive CUTV News Live series with Christine Rose, who's an outstanding coach, author, speaker, and catalyst for women. If you look up tenacity in the dictionary, you might see Christine Rose's portrait there, because she rose above a difficult childhood to establish a career in business and later on a very successful coaching practice. She is today an official member of the Forbes Coaches Council, an ICF Associate Certified Business and Executive Coach, and a Taylor Protocol Certified Career Coach. And beyond her coaching honors, Christine is well regarded as a speaker and author who brings great insight, wisdom, and concern to each subject. One that she is especially passionate about is women, their rights, their intellect, talents, and anything that might affect their ability to reach their fullest potential. Christine has appeared here before on CUTV News Radio Live. I also had an opportunity to do an exclusive TV interview with her at our studio, which was wonderful. And she also has a new book that she's working on called Life Beyond #MeToo. The forthcoming book offers conversations and tips, resources for victims, and a coach's perspective on the sexual harassment, abuse, assault topic, plus something that everybody can benefit from, a look into what it will take to transform what was before #MeToo into what could be. In the next part of our series, Christine will continue to discuss her book, its powerful subject, and some of what you'll find in its chapters as well. A few examples are the old normal, which we'll be talking about today, the sexualization of women and girls, and the path to safer, more equitable future, not just here in America, but on a global scale. Through her book and her strategic counsel, Christine hopes to empower as many women and their male allies as she can. Now, as a coach, she does this daily. She enjoys helping clients, particularly women in business, to master certain leadership skills such as communication, influence, and executive presence. You get more information on those components through her mastermind class available via her website. Really wonderful topic, and we're so excited to have her for this episode as we continue our exclusive series with her here on CUTV News Radio Live. Christine, good afternoon. For us, good morning for you there in beautiful Seattle on the West Coast. Thanks for being with us today, and welcome back to CUTV News Radio Live. Hope you had a wonderful 4th of July holiday.
Hi, Jim. It is great to be with you and your listeners wherever they are and whatever time it is that they're listening. And, you know, independence is such a huge value, and to be able to celebrate the independence of the United States, and then also just to celebrate the independence of people. Some really great celebrations. We had a good time. Thank you.
That's wonderful. And we're going to talk today about the old normal. And in your book, you describe life before #MeToo. It was certainly a transformational event. Tell us a little bit about that, how and why that is so from your perspective.
Yeah, from my perspective, the power of the #MeToo was really how it uncovered stories globally. And when that happened, and uncovering the self-revelation of stories of women and girls, and some men for sure, the shame, any isolation, you know, from keeping stories secret, really got lifted and has been removed for so many. And as people around the world were able to share their experience, they were able to see, I'm not alone. And they were able to be believed, sometimes for the first time. So that was really transformational. Another thing that we saw was, as the Me Too hashtag was so overwhelmingly part of the media coverage in 2018, the movement has gained ground. And, you know, not only did it reveal objectification of women, it also created an opportunity for transformation to happen culturally and legally. And I'm not saying that, you know, in any way to discount the decades, I mean, lifetimes of work that people have done, both in the U.S. and globally, to help equalize life for females or for those who you've been victimized, or to improve their life, because it certainly has. But that this was part of what I call a transformational event. Because if we look at transformation and we see what's gone before as kind of an old rule set, and we see what's coming up as a new rule set or a new normal, I call it old normal and new normal, there are definitely signs that things have changed and are continuing to change. And I write about that in the book. Listeners can also learn more about some of the changes happening on the Facebook page that we have on. It's at www.facebook.com/lifebeyondmetoo.
That's terrific. And congratulations. I know you've been working on this for such a long time, and it's been really very important, you know, for you to get the word out in the way that you have. And you've been talking about this dream of the book for a while now, and congratulations. I'm just personally very, very happy for you, you know, knowing you as I do, Christine, because this is a big, big moment in your life, and we're all very happy for you. So kudos, bravo, and congratulations as the book, you know, is going to be debuting. And just sending you all the best on that. So it's our pleasure to share in this revelry of excitement with you here on CUTV News Radio Live as well. So congratulations on that, because I know it's been a labor of love and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears putting that book together, right? Yeah.
Thank you.
You are very, very
welcome. Thank you very much. It is a process, and it, you know, pretty much can depend. Now, this is my first book, and so learning that process, that it just takes much longer than you think, and it's a lot more work than you think, but you just got to start. So if there's any listeners out there that are ready to change the world and you need some encouragement on starting your book, let me just tell you, you got to start. So we are getting close to the end, and I will get a date to you as soon as I have it, so make sure you sign up on the Life Beyond Me Too Facebook page for that. But thank you so much, Jim.
You're very welcome. You write that objectification as part of the old normal. Describe for that that for us, if you can, Christine. What exactly does that mean, and how does objectification contribute to hashtag MeToo issues and stories? And are sex trafficking and pornography offshoots of objectification? A couple of different questions, and they're all rolled into one. But yeah.
Okay, let's just take them one at a time. So, like I said before, I see, okay, so there's a model by Peter Deming and Robert Dunham, and it's a transformation model. And the way I see Me Too is that it's part of what they call a transformational event, or TA. And Deming and Dunham say before the TA, there's an old rule set or old common sense. And after the TA, there's a new common sense or new rule set. I call it old normal before Me Too, hashtag Me Too, and new normal after hashtag Me Too. And I dream of a world where there are no more Me Too stories ever, that it just doesn't happen. And I do believe and that objectification is a big part of old normal. Objectification is using people as objects rather than valuing them as equal human beings. And, you know, in the Me Too stories, it was sexual objectification. It's the reduction of people to physical objects for someone's sexual use. And, or either just, you know, for unthinkingly, sexual objectification created Me Too stories. And then what happens is when messages of objectification are internalized, they play into how someone sees themselves and behaves, and then that's self-objectification because people buy those messages. So when you asked how does objectification contribute to Me Too stories and issues, I see this as a common denominator in all these stories, because in order to, you know, to be that victim, that person was treated like an object instead of being considered as the full human being they have, that they are. And for the offender to treat that person as an object, they have to discount the person. They are then thinking solely about themselves and what they want, if they're thinking at all. But it precludes thoughts of the victim and their innate worth as a fellow human being on the planet. All that the offender is thinking about is what they want and how they can benefit. So objectification is really a key to look at. And from a coach approach, what I do is I deconstruct things with people. When I'm looking at helping the client facilitate change, we get down to the stories under the stories. And underneath each Me Too story, there's a story of an offender who somehow thinks that they have the right to treat another human being as if they're just an object. And actually, you know, you talked about sex trafficking and pornography, and those are, whether or not that's an offshoot of objectification. And we have a world in which sex trafficking and pornography are massive, huge, global problems and crime and issues everywhere. And, you know, we read about it in the news. And wouldn't it be great to have a new normal where there wasn't any more treating people as objects or using people's objects rather than valuing them as human beings? That's my desire. And I think it's fair to say that sex trafficking and pornography are fueled by old normal rule set, that somehow objectification is tolerable. And in the, you know, in the book, I look at these things and other things a lot. There's way more than we can cover in one interview about objectification and the damage it does to a person. But in sex trafficking and pornography, you know, especially sex trafficking, when a person pays for sex, whether they're about to get their gratification from a trafficked person or in the infrequent case of someone who's in the sex business voluntarily, they're objectifying that person. Just the act of buying sex is objectifying a person, because the exchange is reducing that person to a body. The buyer is treating that person not as a whole, valuable individual who has wants, desires, needs, and value apart from their body, but they're treating them as an object to be used to perform acts that will gratify them. And there might be some kind of acting involved on the part of the trafficked person or the prostitute to make the John feel better about themselves. But the bottom line is that the consumer's there for self-gratification, not to notice or see any intrinsic value in the other person or add value to her or him. It's all about objectification. And actually, so is
the person who's doing the trafficking. So the pimp or the person who's trafficking someone, they're objectifying the people as their paychecks. They don't value them for their humanity either. So I would argue also that someone who's choosing sex work is probably self-objectifying. They've probably internalized messages where they have probably internalized messages that have helped them see themselves as maybe not able to move into other work that would be more gratifying to them. That self-objectification plays into that. Sometimes there are cases, and I will give you that, there are cases where the survival of the person is at stake. And in that case, they might see self-objectification or objectification as a lesser problem than, say, their ability to feed their child. So sex trafficking is totally built on objectification, and so is pornography. The entire point of pornography is to gratify the consumer. And it's not about their relationship to the people who are on a film or in pictures or in videos anyway, as a human worthy of equal respect. It's a industry built on using people as objects. It's also highly illegal in many ways. The porn is illegally produced. The producers also objectify the subjects in their photos or video, and that person is looked at as an income source. And oftentimes, really, Jim, pornography is the video of a crime scene, as people who are being filmed are also being trafficked. So like I said before, there's really not time in a show or even, you know, in a series probably to have enough conversations to move people's minds on these issues. But I hope that by getting the book and by taking a deeper look and bravely initiating conversations, that listeners can contribute to further momentum towards our new normal that we're looking to create that's safe, that's violence-free, and where people are not objectified.
Very important. What is, for the audience, in case they're not familiar, they've heard the word, or patriarchy, how does it feed into the old normal? And does society give more power, you think, to men than women still? And what are some examples of all of that?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Jim, because we're hearing that word thrown around a lot. Patriarchy is society or community that's organized on the father's bloodlines, on the patriarchal bloodlines. And it's a system of a society or government in which the father or the eldest male is the head of the family and the descent is traced through the male line. And how it feeds into old normal is that in patriarchy, men hold the power, and women, for the most part, are excluded from or limited in holding positions of power. And patriarchy objectifies women as sexual objects for creation of heirs and for labor. And the patriarchy system of objectification of women really does contribute a great deal to the old normal rule set that has created this mess of a world full of damaged people who came out with their Me Too stories over the last year and a half. One of the roots of sexual harassment and violence is this dynamic of unequal power relationships between men and women, and it shows up in workplaces, for example, where if there's a cultural imbalance of power in a workplace, you're more likely to have harassment because of concentrated power, because the powerful target the vulnerable. And the vulnerability of the victim is what the powerful use to keep the victim silent. And as somebody who was abused and kept silent for, you know, decades, honestly, I understand that. The cultural imbalance of power in patriarchy is really fertile ground for abuse. So patriarchy in our society was established in the Near East by about 500 BCE. And if you look at written history and you look at recorded history, even though women have, as always, been agents and actors in life and in time, they have been excluded from recorded history, and they have been seen not as people but as objects to be used or ignored as needed by whoever is in power. So you were talking about, what about now, you know, does society give more power to men than women, and maybe some examples of that. And I can say we've moved the needle, but there's a long way to go. So even in the U.S., if you look at the imbalance of power in legislative bodies in the U.S. and around the world, so legislation representation is imbalanced. There's definitely a power balance there in favor of males. And it actually comes through an imbalance in the education system, because according to the UN, there are 16 million girls that will never set foot in a classroom. And women account for 2/3 of the over 700 million adults that don't have basic literacy skills. So this powerlessness feeds into the poverty that they get stuck in, this early marriage and pregnancy and gender-based violence, traditional attitudes about the status of women. These are a lot of obstacles that keep women and girls from exercising their rights to participate in education or in legislation. And as a result, the laws have favored men. So if you go back, it wasn't until like 1285, that's less than 800 years ago, that rape was actually considered a crime against the person. Because before that, it was considered a crime against the father of the person who was raped, or the community.
Mm.
And so people weren't even viewed as people. They were viewed as an extension of a family. And there are laws, for example, in some countries that prefer males in their bloodlines, where they have fertility control policies, for example, in China. Or there are laws that, or cultural laws or old normal rules about the importance of the dowry or of a bride price, in, for example, in some countries where it clearly places the woman in a subservient position to the father in the household and to the betrothed, rather than, you know, her value as a human being. Someone else is determining her value. So, and the powerlessness continued. I mean, even in the U.S., women had no property rights until the 1860s, no voting rights until 1920. And we know it wasn't even until the 1964 Civil Rights Act that that discrimination in employment on the basis of sex became illegal. So absolutely, there's been, when women aren't in legislation, the laws definitely favor men. So, for example, in 1969 in California, they were the first state to have a no-fault divorce law. And it wasn't until the 70s that women were permitted to have credit in their own names. And even then, when it first, you know, when women were first given the right to have credit in their own name, a spouse had to sign that it was okay. So all of the powerlessness, it leads to objectification of women, and gender-based violence absolutely disproportionately impacts women. There are way more many victims who were politically or economically marginalized that are women and girls. If there are wars and, you know, ethnic conflicts in those areas, we know the combatants. You know, all of a sudden the women are gone, their resources are gone, people steal the women and girls for trafficking, rape, whatever, and it actually, they use them as fodder to help the soldiers, like, increase their income and their worth. So, unfortunately, the world hasn't shifted enough, and that's why I think we need a new normal.
It's a very important, big, and vital thing to really appreciate and absorb and apply into our daily lives and our society in general, absolutely. What are some of the tips that are discussed in the book for this shifting happening within the culture? There's a shift in many, many areas happening within the culture.
Yeah. As a coach, I am very fortunate to be able to see people shift important changes in their lives happen and transformation happens. And so I am a believer in change and transformation because it happens on an individual level and it can happen on a cultural level as well. It's important to remember that shifts happen one step at a time and it can snowball. So when somebody gets going on a personal change, when they have small wins, they can start having more small wins and then they can have bigger wins. So one step is to acknowledge where we are now. And I think part of the value of the book is that it helps us to take a deeper look at really where we are and where we could be. So that's another step is, and a tip is, If people will come together to envision change and what it might look like and have those conversations about what might a new normal look like and how could we envision that shift. And honestly, to recognize, a third thing is to recognize that there are pressures pushing the opposite way. I mean, it took decades for the civil rights laws to pass. It took decades, it took generation of women to get the right to vote. And there is heavy cultural pressures for the status quo. So one tip is let's look at the vital behaviors that people need to enact change. What are the real vital behaviors that individuals need to adopt in their families, in their communities, in their cities? What is it that we're looking for and how do we get specific about the vital behaviors that need to change? And if we agree as a culture, hey, it's time to have these conversations, whether they're uncomfortable or not, is it more uncomfortable to have a world where, billions of women are going to be victims of violence, or to just go ahead and have the difficult conversations? And so one tip would be to look at what changes have to happen in human behaviors and to identify them. And, some of them are just simple, like stop objectifying people, value people. Look at what consent really means. Embrace accountability. These are all things that we can do to start shifting the culture. Demonstrate respect for people. It seems like common sense, but we've been living in a crazy world and it's really time for a new normal.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the name of the book again, for folks that are listening to the show wondering, okay, let's hear that title again. It's Life Beyond #MeToo. And to learn more, of course, ChristineRose.coach is the website, but she also has a wonderful Facebook page that's established as well, facebook.com/LifeBeyondMeToo. And of course, that's TOO. Christine, thanks so much for joining us on the show. The half hours always fly by so fast with you, but it's a real pleasure having you on CUTV News Radio Live. Look forward to our next show next week on the 15th. And thanks for everything you're doing. It's wonderful, the work you're doing, and we appreciate all that you're doing as well for society in general. Thanks for being with us on the show today, and look forward to continuing next week.
Thank you so much, Jim. It's great to be here. I really appreciate you, too.
You are very welcome, and thanks for your kind words as well. You take care. You have a wonderful week ahead. We'll chat again next week. She'll be back on the 15th, folks, at the same time, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on CUTV News Radio Live. Check out Christine Rose, and that's christinerose.coach, or her Facebook page as well. You can pre-order the book. That's right. Right now, you can pre-order the book by going to facebook.com/lifebeyondme2. And again, of course, that's T-O-O, Life Beyond Me 2. All right. Thanks for being with us. Stay tuned. I'll be back in less than 30 minutes with another live show and a great guest from all around the world right here exclusively on CUTV News Radio Live. Take care. Bye for now. And we'll talk in about 30 minutes right here on CUTV News Radio Live.
You've been listening to CUTV News Radio. If you want to learn more about our programming or perhaps be considered for a future show, visit us on the web at www.cutvnews.com. And if you enjoyed listening to today's show, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and be sure to write a review. Thanks for listening, and from all of us at CUTV News Radio, we hope you have a productive and inspired day.